is done, but Shark Tank will continue.
But that's the other thing. There's such a revolving door of the executives. Like
people in Shark Tank?
If you watch every episode of Shark Tank, you don't see the same four investors, right?
There's the core group historically, and Cuban kind of, because he came in season two, but is really like truly an original in that way, if you can be. I'm trying to think of an analogy of somebody who's came in at the beginning, but a little late. But Cuban's, he's kept trying to get an original. But you have that Kevin O'Leary, who's now been going on CNN now. Like, he's a conservative pundit on there. He's not even American, I don't think. He's Canadian. Barbara.
Well, he got caught up in FTX.
Yes, yes. And then
another one of my favorite stories.
Damon John's still doing it.
I could never get enough of SBF. I hated that kid so much. Like, I've never fist pumped. When I found out that kid was guilty and going to jail, I've never fist pumped so hard.
But is there another sports owner that could do Shark Tank? Because every
Ballmer's an electric
Ballmer
factory.
Was my first
Ballmer's
thought.
An electric
He's
factory.
He's awesome.
All right.
And I confirmed my old math teacher.
They're going to have to get some more sports people in there. I think it's a smart idea.
My old math teacher worked at Microsoft early, so you can tell why he was a math teacher, because he didn't need to work. And he's just like, I was like, is he the electric factory? He goes, oh, absolutely. He's a content machine. So Reality tried to claim that the core of Around the Horn was journalism. Journalism.
Like the horse?
Like the backbone of the show.
Huh. Okay.
Tony. Literally, like, it was people trying to get famous. Like, improve their profile. And literally, you were giving takes. That's not journalism. That's opinion.
Personality.
Personality-driven.
I'm going to say, keep telling me what he's saying, but
so then he's like,
he may have a delusional view of this product.
I understand. It's his life. Yeah. I get that. Yeah. I'm not trying to be insensitive to that, but it's like, also, it seems obvious that ESPN is going to move away from, I think, that style. Like, they're fine with Stephen A., Wilbon, Kornheiser, them giving opinions. But I think, like, the revolving door of pundits is something they're moving away from, because Reality, you're having to piece it together. Reality said he tried to pitch them on, well, we'll have more athletes in, and
no, that's not the show.
You know?
They might have had too many different people.
That was what I thought the issue was. I don't care. Bring in diverse opinions, whatever. I think there needed to be more consistency, because in the end, like, what made Around the Horn, what made it good at first was, those, like, you had your guys, and you knew, like, all right, what are they going to say today? But then when you just started shuffling and rotating so many people, like, I don't think anyone was doing an exceptionally bad job, but it's just like, who is this again? Where are they from?
Right, and you have to develop somewhat, even though they're in different cities on different screens, like, there is chemistry that was built early on, and, you know, a lot of these guys knew each other.
Well, and it was also built on, like, the regionality of sports. Right. Like, you had the East Coast guy, the Midwest guy,
it was on the map.
The LA guy.
You're going around the horn.
Yeah, correct.
I don't know, you know, I don't know if I'm here today doing this if it wasn't for Around the Horn and PTI. I mean, those were the shows that got me hooked to this, you know, having your takes every day on what's going on. Having your takes and eating too. And Around the Horn was the perfect complement to that. That's, to me, is what the problem is going to be. Like, maybe they don't go back to it, and on late night talk shows are kind of having a similar thing. Like, is Around the Horn past? I don't think it's
CBS
necessarily
gonna
past
have
this time. CBS is not doing a show after Colbert anymore. Like, it's done.
Yeah.
Like, they're not doing a late late show has died.
Well, the late late show died, and then they had the Taylor Tomlinson weird reboot of
right.
What was the Hardwick show
at midnight?
But it wasn't the same. And then it's like,
and she quit, and so they're not doing anything else with that. Yeah. So CBS is, so it's like, but that's real late at night. You were talking about 4 o'clock. That's in the, you know, that's the launching of the day part for, you know, your evening of sports kind of started at 4 o'clock. A lot of times on turning on your TV, it's going to matter what they pair with PTI, because not anything, you know.
Reportedly,
there are reports.
They're exploring a Shannon Sharpe show, which I found to be noteworthy for a couple of reasons. Number one, is he suspended or not?
I mean, that's a great question.
Because he kind of, he made it seem like...
He's on hiatus?
He made it seem like he was going to go take a timeout. Like, he was the receiver that had run one too many go routes. He tapped the helmet, was coming to the sideline. But...
That's what I understood.
The fact that ESPN... Because this was reported by Marshawn. The fact that ESPN's even exploring this tells me he's not in timeout. Or come football season, he's not in timeout. He might be a sneaky genius where... He's just going to avoid like the worst part of the calendar and show up in football season ready to go.
Yeah,
that
I don't. And I, who knows if
that's
they put him
genius?
I don't think under the current circumstances, I wouldn't think that that is who they're. I don't think you canceled the show yet. Like, why are you canceling it without the plan? Like, do you have a plan already? Like, why are you canceling around the horn?
I don't know because this is the other thing that
know what you're going to do with that spot.
The Shannon Sharpe one makes sense to me because they've paid him.
They're going
to
lean into the
individual. They want so much money.
They want one big personality, right? Correct. That's what they're doing with Pat McAfee. Rick Eisen's coming back.
Honestly, I know Ryan owns the show, but like, I was wondering, are they going to think about a 30-minute version of the Pivot podcast with Ryan Clark?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, do you think it, and that's where it's going to, well, they're going to really, I'm going to say show their cards, but like see what their future holds here for ESPN program. Is it going to feel like a podcast show, like the Pat McAfee? Is it going to feel like a podcast or a TikTok type of show? Or are they going to try something totally new? Because Around the Horn was totally kind of different. There was nothing like it. And it was kind of like a game show. But they used what was revolutionary satellite technology in a way at the time to get these guys to be able to talk instantaneously with each other in this format. Like, it was a big deal. Obviously, it's not as much anymore.
I almost wonder if they're going to have so much content on the new app.
Yeah.
I almost wonder if they're going to, like, wait and see what clicks on that and then maybe plug that in.
But it's a half hour, 4 o'clock. We'll see. I mean, we don't know. All we know is it's the last one. I'll be watching as they go on an indefinite break. Wasn't it always like around
a 23 and a half hour break?
Yeah.
That was always the tagline.
Yeah.
All right. We haven't gotten to the Emmys, so let's do that when we come back. We get into the list. We'll do that next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Robert Irwin Jewelers is doing it again. This time it's at the Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended. It is a 6-hour, 60% off sale. It's the real deal. There's no marking up to mark down, just outstanding savings for 6 hours only on May the 24th, this Saturday. 60% off designer jewelry, engagement rings, bracelets, earrings, necklaces, gemstones, even name brand watches are 60% off. There's over 1,000 items to choose from, so shop early for the best selection. It starts at 10 a.m. again at the Diamond Showroom right there on Perkins Extended. They also have special financing available, up to 6 months to pay interest free at Robert Irwin Jewelers. Again, the sale will end at 4 p.m., 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., 6 hours, 60% off. For full details, go to rijewelers.com. Let's get into the list. The Sports Emmys. All right, Kevin. So we had the Sports Emmys last night, and again, not televised. I believe it was streamed. The only way that you had to know what was going on was if you followed ESPN personalities. A lot of patting themselves on the back last night. That's not what I want to talk about. I want to talk about a few of these categories. All right.
All I know is that Lady Gaga won something, so go ahead.
Outstanding live sports special. Cool. Great. Got it. Super Bowl. So this is for the 2024 TV. So it was the Chiefs-Niners Super Bowl, which is 58. I believe.
Okay.
All right. Outstanding live sports series. Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli.
Oh, with Peyton and Eli.
Another one for Peyton over Brady, as the NFL on Fox was also nominated. This is where it starts to get redundant. Outstanding edited event coverage.
Okay.
NFL Game Day All Access Super Bowl 58. Which streamed live on YouTube. Also nominated was All Access, Davis Garcia, the epilogue on Showtime, NFL Draft, The Pick Is In on the Roku channel. just also learned that. The road to the Super Bowl on CBS and the 2023 Special Olympics World Games, not on NBC, on ABC. This one was a new one for me. Outstanding digital innovation.
Okay, yeah. What was that?
The winner was something on the MSG network referred to as Dreamcast. Sorry, Dreamcaster.
I was like, Dreamcast, I think that was the Sega system, right?
That's what I thought, too. Also nominated were Big City Greens Classic, a fully animated live sporting event with integrated real-time animated talent.
Yeah, that's a
talent.
Cartoon show, right?
Yeah, it's on...
That one I actually saw clips from. That one
was
I've heard
it the hockey one?
That was the NHL one, yeah. Okay. Where they just essentially tracked all the players and made them...
Oh, yeah,
cartoons.
They should have best hybrid animation broadcast. Is that not a category?
So, well, this is what confuses me. Not even nominated in this was the Toy Story game, and the Toy Story game won the most awards of anyone. They won three, but it's not nominated in that. Outstanding interactive experience. Thursday Night Football, TNF optionality. Is that just saying they gave us multiple broad, like if you want to watch the StatCast?
Yeah,
I think so.
They won for that.
This one was unbelievable. Outstanding public service content. They're literally handing out an award for the most heavy-handed no-duh message. Notre Dame football won that for What Would You Fight For? Tough look for Goodell. I have to wonder, does this mean Goodell's going to come out swinging in 2025 with another campaign that he's going to solve? They did not win. Football for Everyone was what they nominated, and then the youth flag football. Mike Breen wins outstanding play-by-play personality, so Ian Eagle did not have to lose to his son.
That was the big thing to watch.
Ernie Johnson wins best studio host. Charles Barkley won best studio analyst. Greg Olson won best personality event analyst.
I love that.
Fox is
awesome.
Number two nominated. Over Tom Brady. Best sideline reporter was Tracy Wolfson. Outstanding personality, emerging on-air talent was Noah Eagle. I think there are more awards here than there are the actual Emmys, Kevin.
I think that's possible. But, you know, this is the sports Emmys. And...
But then, like, we also have, like, outstanding, like, studio show weekly. And College Game Day won that, but then there's Outstanding Studio Show Limited Run. Inside the NBA beat College Game Day on that. It's like...
They got to give them both an award. Now, this is why I guess it's partially the reason it's not televised. There's too many awards. You're going to have to cut
it down.
I feel
like the biggest reason it's not televised is there's just not a celebrity element.
There's not enough, for sure, but... No, I mean, I saw Lady Gaga. I was trying to match up. I was like, are you looking at an old list or am I looking at a different award show? You have Lady Gaga, which won for this year's Super Bowl because she performed at the pregame show. So I was like,
maybe that's in the technicals. Let's see.
The Lady Gaga won her first Emmy award. Ooh, it's an Emmy for Lady Gaga. She has not won an Emmy yet at all.
I wouldn't,
because
she hasn't been on TV a lot.
She's going for the EGOT.
Does she have a Tony?
Not yet, but I mean, Lady Gaga could get that in her sleep if she wanted to get one of those.
Did Shallow win an Oscar?
It was.
I know it was nominated. I just don't remember.
Nominated. And she, of course, won for acting for the Joker movie. I
didn't think it was that bad.
Did she do well in it?
Shallow won an Oscar for Best Original Song.
So there you go. So she got the Oscar. She knows she's got the Grammy. And if this counts as the Emmy,
I don't.
She won away. She's gonna get that Tony. But anyway, what are you saying? Because it's Hold My Hand. You remember that it was like that overproduced Lady Gaga performance on the pregame show this year for the Super Bowl. It was like at night, and they like all like Terry Bradshaw and company like, walk up wearing matching
shirts.
That will
be next year's.
But I'm reading it right now from Deadline.
No, she won. She won one for the Super Bowl performance.
Yeah,
she is just a Tony away from an EGOT.
But I don't know what I don't. I'm gonna get you what the link I'm looking at. That's why we got some stuff messed up. But either we, here's the thing we do know. Last night was the award ceremony, so the we do know what happened last night. The Olympics are all over the awards that I looked at because last year's summer was the Olympics, right? Yeah, yeah. I remember Simone Biles.
Yeah.
But the problem with any sports awards is the real awards are always awarded on the field or on the court, and so when it comes down to the Emmys, you're talking about. This is the only one. Like, I feel like the ESPYs, you know, it's like, because it's.
Well, because the ESPYs is just truly made for, like, it is
it's made
ESPY.
For TV. But this is like, they're really rewarding the stuff that does not get the championship or whatnot. Sometimes, right? Some of these are winners all the time. Here, I dropped it in the doc, the link that I was looking at.
Okay.
The report from Deadline with some stuff. So. The categories, they don't make much sense. And it, sometimes, like, when you're watching the Oscars, right, a lot of the categories, like, what's the difference between this one and this one? Like, what are you talking about?
Sound they just editing or mixing?
And they merge those, finally. They're like, okay, to hell with it. We're just going to have one sound. There's just one sound category now. They just made one. They put them together. It's like, yeah, whatever. You get your one reward. But they don't have stunts. They need stunts for the Oscars.
I'll just always go to the grave. When Bohemian Rhapsody won for best editing, like, that was when I realized, like, this like, there are plenty of shots in that movie where they haven't even used continuity.
Right.
And that won best editing.
Well, yeah, the editors know.
USC Notre Dame. Okay, so I bring this up because Pat Forty, 2 days ago, reports that the potential end of the USC Notre Dame football series is looming, according to Pete Bevekwa, the Notre Dame athletic director. Pavekwa said, I think Southern Cal and Notre Dame should play every year for as long as college football is played, and SC knows that's how we feel. So, at the question, first off, it seems to be, it's coming primarily from the USC side. So, some people are saying SC wants the game, because the way it works is, when the game is played at USC, it's always like the last game of the year. It's played late in November. So if it's not the last game, it's the second to last game. But when it's played at Notre Dame, it's typically like 1st of October. So reportedly, SC wants the game moved up, playing earlier. And Notre Dame, I guess, is a little opposed to that. But it seems like that's maybe more negotiable,
right?
Which leads me to believe that that's not the actual issue.
Well,
the actual issue is that USC doesn't want to play Notre Dame. Now,
why?
The question I have is exactly that. Why? Do they not want to play them because their first taste of the Big Ten and the 9-game schedule did not go well? And there's an acknowledgement of, we don't really want another game?
Maybe.
The other thought was,
but I mean,
because Lincoln Riley was asked about it, and Lincoln said, basically along the lines of, as long as the playoff format is what it currently is, aka no automatic bids, he doesn't think they're going to play the game. So that seems to me to be the crux of the issue. So is USC kind of doing the Big Ten a solid by saying, all right, if y'all don't hurry up on the automatic qualifiers, we're going to stop playing this game? Using it as a negotiation trick, to which I don't think that makes a lot of sense, because that seems like where it's headed no matter what. I don't think this would be the one thing to push it over. What I do wonder, though, is everybody knows the Big Ten and the SEC would move heaven and earth to take Notre Dame. What I'm wondering is SC saying, we won't play this game unless it's a conference game. Basically, the only way Notre Dame's ever going to join a conference is to apply pressure to where they feel like they have to play in a conference to have access. Is this essentially USC saying, like, we're doing the Big Ten's job for them, we're doing a solid, and we're trying to apply pressure to get them to join a conference? To which, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me either. I don't think that's what would push it over the edge. But
I mean, it makes some sense. But
I do think this is actually.
If you're one of these bigger schools, Like, I would not ever be happy with the treatment that Notre Dame gets, which is special VIP treatment all the time, no matter how decent your team is. Why do they get special treatment and nobody else gets special treatment? And I know there's reasons, but there's also, if I'm USC, like, there's no reason they should be getting it. Why are you helping them get the special treatment?
Yeah, I still think...
So I could see that, but I don't see that being the reason. But
it seems to me the simplest reason is we've got to play 9 conference games, and this league's tougher than we thought.
I mean, if you look at their schedule, I pulled up their schedule. Like, they're playing, they have a slow start, Missouri State and Georgia Southern, right? Like, small schools that sound made up. And then you have Purdue, Michigan State, Illinois, Michigan, Notre Dame at South Bend on October the 18th, Nebraska, Northwestern, Iowa, Oregon, UCLA, finish a little Pac-12 action at the end of the year. It's tough for sure.
Wait,
but
so, okay, said Penn State. Did you say Michigan?
Michigan State. They do not have Penn State.
So I think what the Big Ten did was, I think they split the schedule in half. You played half the teams this year and half the teams next year.
They got Michigan, Michigan State, Oregon, and Iowa, UCLA, Northwestern.
Yeah, so they're playing all Nebraska. The teams they didn't play last year.
You know, this Nebraska game would be great, you know, 1998. Do you miss this? That's the question. Like, this is one of those rivalries that, like, it's there, it exists, it's always been around. But, like, one thing people always say, I miss the regional rivalries, you know. This is not a regional. These teams are not close to each other. These schools are not close to each other. Does that make sense on a map?
It does have some history because, like, SC, when everybody was trying to blackball Notre Dame and not play them, SC was the one that opened their arms and said, we'll play you.
And now here they go.
I mean, it's going to take away. I feel like this was always, when this game was at LA, I felt like half the time whoever won the game would win the Heisman. Like, that was Carson Palmer basically won the
right.
Heisman.
Yep.
Caleb won the Heisman that game.
Notre Dame's got Miami, Texas A&M, Purdue as well, Arkansas, Boise State. I mean, they're not having trouble finding some people. Of course, they play Boston College.
That's the thing. Everybody will play Notre Dame.
Right?
Except for the Big Ten schools.
They have Stanford, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, Navy. I mean, really, they have, quite frankly, mediocre schedule overall.
That's what happens when you play 5
Big Ten and
ACC schools.
Yeah.
And then they're going to play the service academies.
They're going to play them. So they got A&M and they got Texas A&M and Miami. And who knows how great Arkansas will be next year. But, you know.
That game is fun, though.
And Southern Cal. No, that game is.
Because Notre Dame's going to Fayetteville.
Yeah, that is.
Also, how do we feel about
this? That's going to be banana. September 27th, y'all. Like, that's like, well, if you're looking for.
It's good for the Tigers. It's the week before Arkansas has to play Memphis.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sandwich spot. Tim Murray already identified it like as like a 5-star situational spot. Like, you got to play the Tigers in this one.
Oh, wow. This is fantastic. Yeah. Woo, getting ready for college football here, and it's not even Memorial Day yet.
Not even Memorial. And it's an early Memorial Day. It's still not even Memorial Day. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, CJ Hurt joins the program next. We'll talk about everything with CJ right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. VIP Play is live in Tennessee. You can go download the app wherever you get your apps, and you can also claim your VIP welcome bonus, which means you make when you make your first bet of $5 or more, you get $100 in bonus bets instantly. Just use the promo code Odyssey, AUDACY. Also, keep in mind you can win $10,000 in the VIP Players Club sweepstakes for this month. Every bet will get you one entry. Every dollar bet will get you one entry. Parlays and same game parlays will get you 10 times the entries. Players can receive daily profit boosts as well. And there's over 200 sports leagues to wager on, so go see it all live in the VIP Play app where everyone gets treated like a VIP. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and located in Tennessee to wager. CJ Hunt, beg your pardon, CJ Hurt, beg your pardon, is a Grind City Media personality. I was reading my screen and then trying to click down. I apologize. CJ Hurt is a Grind City Media personality. You can see him on The Jessica Benson Show with CJ Hurt, the HBCU Huddle. Follow him on Twitter on X at ConRadicalness. CJ, does Ja Morant need to learn to foul bait like SGA?
If the question is, did John Morant need to go hard to the hole and go into contact to get foul called?
No.
Then yes. Yes.
No, see, here's my deal. I want him to do like the Brunson and like what SGA do, which is kind of that flat-footed foul baiting where they're stationary. What bothers me is when he's trying to draw contact and he's in the air, because I feel like he loses control.
Yeah, he's got to be much more under control. That's why they're able to get the two players you name, SGA and Jalen Brunson. That's why they're able to get those fouls called a bit more often than Ja gets foul calls. Don't get it mistaken, but it's not like them, because sometimes he is just out of control and the refs can see that he's out of control. He's got to be able to be strong enough to take a little bit of a bump, and then when the big pump comes, that's when you get the foul call. He's got to be a bit more under control in order to do that. And more importantly, if he doesn't get the foul call, he can't just stop playing to throw his arms up and yell at the refs.
Yeah, because I'm with you. It felt to me like this year one of the key differences in the officiating was if you left your feet and then we're trying to create contact.
Yeah.
I felt like they were not giving you that call. And I think that's what also led to a ton of Ja's frustration. But I'm with you. Like, you can't just stop. I guess the other question that I have is, granted, it's one game and they're still, you know, in the end, Minnesota's only got to win four. But if this is the way that series is going to go, does that make you think any differently about the Grizzlies if, like, let's say Oklahoma City wins convincingly in five. Does that make you feel any differently about the Grizzlies?
No, and I'm not sure why it would or why it should, because Oklahoma City is in your conference, and that you still have to go through Oklahoma City then at that point, and you are worlds away from what they are right now. So, no, it wouldn't make me feel any better. That's been the best team in the Western Conference the past 2 years. They won way more games than anybody else in that conference. And the West is loaded. The West is tough. We talk about how tough the West is. And OKC just ran through it like it was paper thin. And that's the team you've got to get past. That's the team you've got to beat. So no matter what they do, I'm not going to be feeling better, because we've seen what the Grizzlies can do against them all season long, and we've seen them do it in the playoffs as well, what they can do against them in the playoffs as well. I remember when it was number one seed in the West versus number two seed in the West, Grizzlies Thunder, and the Thunder came out here and just mollywopped the Grizzlies, if I remember that score correctly. And so it's like, oh, okay, there's a clear difference between the best team in this conference and at the time the second best team in this conference, and only got highlighted more as the season went on. And then you get the playoffs, and these are the two teams facing off against one another. And the Grizzlies were close for a half against the Thunder, and they fought valiantly in game four against the Thunder, but that result was still a sweep. I remember that. So, no, I'm not going to be feeling any better if the Thunder go on to sweep the Timberwolves and then sweep their way to an NBA Finals championship. But no, that wouldn't make me feel any better.
I guess let me rephrase it. I think the conventional thought was that the Grizzlies are not even on the Timberwolves tier. If they win in that fashion, does it make you think that they're still in the Timberwolves tier? Because you're right. To me, I think that's what the real question is like, are they still in that tier?
Can they still make the conference finals? Because, like, yeah, sure, if your movie's coming out this weekend, CJ, Mission Impossible is going to win. I'm sorry. Like, you're going to, like, but, like, it'd be great to get be Lilo and Stitch and get the second most money, right? Like, it's still great to be close if you can be close instead of being the
– Maybe they get hurt next year.
Right. But, yeah, maybe something happens. But the – you know, in an NBA, it's an accomplishment to make the conference finals, at least, to be competitive in the playoffs. Like, could this Grizzlies team have been competitive if they had a different matchup? Could they be in the same situation you see the Timberwolves in?
Hell,
that's the question.
They couldn't have. What are we talking about here? What? Huh?
Could they have made it here to play the Thunder in the Western Conference Finals
have.
If they had a different seed?
No. All right. Team? Which team? Look at everybody from the play-in round all the way of teams. So I guess we're talking teams, the top 10 teams in the West, the teams who got into the play-in and the teams who got into the playoffs. And then I want you to tell me who you feel the Grizzlies would have beat in a seven-game series.
Maybe the Timberwolves.
I would argue they would have beaten the Warriors without Steph Curry.
No. We're not doing that.
Well, what I'm saying,
even if we do that, all right, Warriors without Steph Curry, maybe the Timberwolves. I'll give you two teams. I'm being generous.
I think they could have beaten the Lakers too. I think the Lakers were gonna.
Yeah, for sure. I think the Lakers were having,
especially when you consider Luka was hurt, and having to play the no inside presence. I think the Grizzlies could have had a shot against the Lakers.
So three.
There's only eight teams, including yourself. They could have been competitive with the Rockets.
I don't care about competitive. You think they beat them in a seven game?
Could they have been?
I mean, the Rockets had real offensive problems.
They would have beat them in a seven game.
That's the question.
The Rockets were beating the hell out of Grizzlies all season long.
Yeah, but three of the four games were competitive. I guess what I'd say is, would I have favored the Grizzlies? Absolutely not. Would I have been on the ground, in complete disarray, shock, if they would have beaten the Rockets? No. That's kind of how I feel. I would have clearly favored the Rockets, but I don't think it was impossible.
I'm being generous and giving you three teams. Generously giving you three of the nine teams. So you need, is it anybody else?
Denver's an interesting one because...
Yeah, they don't even have the MVP on that team.
Well,
you know?
Denver's the interesting one because it's like, okay, in a seven-game series, I'm taking Jokic... But, man, they were awfully close to losing two series. You know, they lost both series they had went to seven, and they could have easily lost in the first round, could have lost. And the Grizzlies were pretty competitive with Denver. But, again, I would have favored Denver.
Okay. All right. So again, in these series, we can talk about the what-ifs and who – if this player gets injured at the wrong time and if the ball bounces this way, there's a chance that the Grizzlies can. But, if we did the Vegas odds thing with this...
They would have been underdogs in every series.
They would have been underdogs in everything, but maybe a matchup against the Mavericks, right?
They would not have been an underdog against the Kings and the Mavericks, but other than that, yes, they would have been an underdog in every
season. They would have been an underdog against the Kings. Yeah. You know, the Kings were also beating the Grizzlies. Grizzlies went winless in Sacramento. All right.
Winless in California.
The Grizzlies are so far away from being Western Conference contenders. Like, that's just the fact of the matter.
If contender means making the conference finals, that's the question, is if it's making the conference finals,
like, are they? I don't think they're that far away from being the two seed. If we're talking about matching up and having a real chance,
they were
against
real
the,
close to the two
against
seed.
The Thunder. Then no, I completely agree with your point.
Being the two seed,
I mean,
what,
I think there were
matter,
three games. I think it was
right?
three
there,
games
there,
away.
Is the two seed? The two seed was who?
The two seed was Houston.
And where are they?
They are at home.
Okay, that seed nonsense no longer matters at this point in the West, right? Whoever you get matched up with is going to be a team that is more than capable.
I totally agree with your point that the matchup mattered. The matchup mattered more than the seed.
And so here's my question again. Which one of those teams does the Grizzlies match up well against? They don't match up well with anybody. The Grizzlies struggle to beat good teams this year. The Grizzlies, when playing good teams before the slide happened,
they matched up okay with the Warriors because of the size. They matched up okay with the Lakers. I know people want to point out Minnesota because they want 3-3-1 against them, but if you look at Minnesota, like the last time we played Minnesota was a much better reflection of what Minnesota was. I do not think they matched up very well with them. Did not particularly match up well with Houston because Houston gets physical with them. They matched up pretty well with Denver because Denver, you know what I mean? Denver doesn't have a ton of depth, and athletically, Denver's not going to set the world on fire.
But the question is, Murray is going to gobble this team up. The Grizzlies were giving up wide open threes for most of the season.
Well, I mean, they blew the big lead in Denver. I mean, you know, like that was a script that we've seen 100 times this year.
Yeah, like I don't understand where this optimism from what happened this year is coming from. We saw this play out.
I think it's a lot of fans taking. I think it's kind of a Schadenfreude thing where a lot of fans are. You laughed at us because what the Thunder did to us, but now you're seeing what the Thunder are.
But we should laugh at you because of what the Thunder did. Though.
You lose by 50.
Like it's laughable. And do you want to be legit true contenders, or do you want to be slightly better than the other teams the Thunder are way better than?
Well, it's tough
conversations that need to be had.
Sure, you want to be as good as the Thunder, but nobody's as good as the Thunder. I think the
Thunder have an unfair advantage right now, and not an unfair advantage. It's one they've earned. Two of their best,
yeah,
two of their best
advantage.
Two of their five best players
unbalanced
are
unbalanced advantage.
Are on
it's unbalanced.
Yeah, it's like rookie deals, and the money is so difficult if you're going to pay three guys to have the depth that they have. With that said, I still believe there's value in being good. Like I think in the NBA, far too often you lose a playoff series and we announce that you're not a contender, blow it up, and I think that's stupid because what we're seeing right now is. What happened last year doesn't really have that much of an impact on this year, and that I think that will hold true again next season. The one caveat being Oklahoma City's probably going to be able to do it again because they're still going to have two of their five best players on a rookie deal.
Grizzlies' record against the Warriors this year.
One and three, I believe.
Lakers.
One and three.
Kings. 1-2. Nuggets. 1-2. Rockets. 1-3. Thunder. 0-4. Clippers. 0-3. Mavericks 3-1, right? Like there you go. The sooner we can come to grips with that's all according to stat news. That's not off the top of my head.
I think the real question is how many of those did Ja play? But I also think that's part of the equation. How many games can you realistically expect him to play? Because if you tell me next year Ja plays 65 games, I think they're going to be significantly better. But I don't know. Is that something you
better against who?
I mean, that's the thing. Like a lot of those games, like in that record, like you are what your record says. Like we keep score for a reason. I don't deny that. But there were a lot of those games that came down to the wire and the Grizzlies found ways to lose. And then the Grizzlies also had an identity crisis during the year.
Okay. So if you're saying to me the Grizzlies with Ja Morant have an identity, okay, what is that identity?
I mean, I think we saw what it kind of was. It's getting Edie back on the floor and basically him playing downhill.
Okay, all right. And that maybe you're right. Maybe that's enough. A healthy Ja Morant is enough to improve some of your record. But even without Ja Morant, right? Like you get something, don't you? Get some of these games. It's not 1-3, 1-2, 0-4, 1-3 against those good teams. You get something without him because the supporting cast is enough to get you something, even without him. And this year, it just wasn't the case. I don't want to be an alarmist, and I don't want to be on here just hating. I mean this when I say it. I mean it. And the sooner people start having those types of conversations, I think the team and the franchise can truly begin to get better. You can't always look at best case scenarios.
No, I agree. I think that's
with the players
far too
as individuals
off.
And yeah. With the team as a whole. Sometimes you got to look at it, and we are, in my opinion, at that time right now. You got to look at it and say, hey, this is what we are. Forget best case scenario for Gigi. Forget best case scenario for Vince. Forget best case scenario for Santi, Luke, Jaren, Dez, Ja, this season, Edie, Wells. Forget best case scenario. Forget that. This is what we are. And you've got to accept the players, the good, the bad, and the ugly, accept the flaws and say, all right, he is flawed. This is his flaw. How do we play around it? How do we play to avoid this? Or how do we get something in here that is better and less flawed? Like to think that you are close would be a major, major mistake by people in charge of things around here. because you just aren't. If you think that you are close and you go out there and you do the same thing that you did this year, you'll probably get the same results next year.
I guess the only thing I'd push back on, and I know it's not apples to apples because they're in the East. I think, though, we would have said the same things about the Knicks and about the Pacers, and they're in the Eastern Conference Finals because they had the same problem. Like, if you listen to Knicks fans, it was like listening to Grizzlies fans, just change the name. It was can't beat the good teams.
In the accent, change
the accent and whatnot. The Pacers are a little different because if you actually watch them from like January on, they were playing at a very high level.
But it's a great team because they really only have one star.
But most people would have said that team's like mediocre plus.
Well, that's what. I'm trying to convince myself, CJ, and I think you've turned me back around, and I'm depressed about it. But like, I was trying to feel like, well, maybe the Grizzlies, if they had a different draw, could have made the conference finals and been blown out by 50 in the conference finals instead of being blown out by 50 in the first round of the playoffs. But I was trying to convince myself they didn't need as big of a move in the offseason as everybody feels like they need a big, big move to just make it to where there's no doubt, everybody, it's so obvious to everyone that every team in the NBA is so far behind the Oklahoma City Thunder. The goal to me is to try to be the team right next to them, so if it breaks right, you can do it, because it's a very tough goal to exceed the current expectations of this Thunder team.
I think that with the right combination of, I'm not sure if it's got to be a huge move or anything like that, right? Like, I please don't get me in trouble for tampering. I'm not saying the Grizzlies go out there and chase after Giannis and get Giannis or anything like that. What I do
that would
think
be great.
They could do, listen, hey, you said it. I don't want to get in any trouble for tampering. They can do some things in the supporting cast and get more health and maturity from the core three. Right. If Ja, Jaren, and Dez, who have not played a whole lot, play together, like you said, 65 games or so next season with upgrades in the supporting cast around them, I think that might be enough for you to be close to in that bunch of teams underneath the Thunder to be one of the better teams in that bunch. When you look around and you think about those teams, it's not like they have a superstar of all superstars, a top 75 player, a top 50 player all time in the NBA on the roster. When you think about what the Rockets are, when you think about even with James Harden on it, right? That's an aging James Harden towards the end of his career. Same thing with Kawhi Leonard with the Clippers. The Kings are what the Kings are. They're still trying to figure out some things, right? There are teams over there you can look around and say, hey, we're close to being better than them. We're close to being able to beat them, putting something on the court that will do more than just be competitive in a 7-game series against them. We can go out there and beat them, and we're close to being able to go out there and beat them in a 7-game series. But like, beating them and then beating the Thunder are two completely different things. And there's got to be a recognition of that, and then there's got to be moves made with that in mind. How do we combat Shea? How do we combat Chet? What do we do on the perimeter, on the offensive end, when Jalen Wells or Alex Caruso or Lou Dort decide they're really going to turn the pressure up and get into us? What roster moves can we make? What offseason upgrades can we make, both with the roster and from a individual player standpoint? What can we do to make ourselves good enough to handle that? Because that is who you've got to get through in the West right now.
CJ, we appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all.
That is CJ Hurt of Grind City Media. Let's go ahead and hit the music, George. For today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story, I got to go to the king, Mike Floria. When the Lions, quote, the league office, realized that 24 votes didn't exist for changing the playoff seating, the Lions, parentheses, the league, withdrew the proposal. So why didn't the Packers, parentheses, the league office, withdraw the rule banning the tush push when it was obvious that the proposal from the Packers / the league was going to fall short of the mark? As one source with direct knowledge of the dynamics told Pro Football Talk, the two situations were very different. On playoff seating, the discussions began with an acknowledgement the Lions were inclined to table it. and never even went to the straw poll regarding the tush push. The owners, air quotes, had a, air quotes, long discussion that resulted in a call for vote. There was never a discussion of tabling it. The implication being the league wants to get rid of, Goodell wants to get rid of the tush push.
Right.
Hey, we still have it. Fly, Eagles, fly. Congratulations.
Hey, I get NBA trivia round tonight, yes. A trivia, so go to StreetEntertainment.com, but we're at Celtic Crossing and Ghost River tonight in a full round of NBA trivia if you want to test yourself tonight. It is free to play, as always.
Celtic Crossing tonight. Want to thank CJ Hurt for joining the program. If you missed anything, be up on the podcast show after the program ends. For George, for Kevin, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.